From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris. In the summer of 1910, thousands and thousands of people crowded into Reno, Nevada.
Blue smoke hung over the Reno rail yards on the morning of July 4, 1910. It rose from the dining cars of scores of special trains parked along a siding 3 miles south of town. 12 had pulled in since 8 o'clock the night before. 7 more were due in by noon.
That's author Jeffrey Ward describing the scene.
Inside, uniformed Negro waiters served eggs, bacon, and coffee to hundreds of boxing fans who had arrived there from both coasts. Hundreds more had rattled their way over the Sierras in automobiles hung with signs that read Reno or bust. Meanwhile, thousands of hungry men wandered the downtown streets in search of breakfast. Reno was running out of everything. Those lucky enough to get inside a restaurant had to settle for whatever was left in the kitchen.
Ward is reading from his book, Unforgivable Blackness, The Rise and Fall of Jack Johnson, a companion to the PBS documentary that airs this evening. And he was describing the scene around a boxing showdown featuring Johnson, a fight billed as the Battle of the Century. Ward's book looks at Jack Johnson's audacious boxing career and his battles against racism inside and out of the ring.
Since 1892, when John L. Sullivan became a heavyweight champion in the gloved era, no white champion had fought a black man. And now, white people ran the world at that time, and the feeling was, crazy as it was, that the heavyweight champion was the biggest, strongest, baddest man in the world. And therefore, sort of by definition, a white man. If it's not a white man, then the whole system of white rule was called into question. Now, the real reason, of course, was they didn't want to fight black fighters because they might lose. And Johnson had to actually chase 3 heavyweight champions before the third one agreed to fight him, Tommy Burns, in 1908.
They fought in Australia for a sum of $30,000, quite a bit of money at that time.
That's the reason that Burns wasn't giving him a fair chance, because he wanted to give him a fair chance. $30,000 was an extraordinary amount of money for that period. And nothing like it had ever been seen in the ring before. And an Australian promoter figured out that the whole world would be watching. And it was.
And at the end of 14 rounds, Johnson emerged as the champion. What was the reaction?
Panic and hysteria. White people, both in the British Empire and in the United States, were devastated that this terrible reversal of fortune had happened. And there was a great outcry at that point for a great white hope to come and restore the title to its rightful owners.
He kept challenging the heavyweight champion at the time, a man named James Jeffries, for the heavyweight title. But Jeffries refused to fight him. Now, Jeffries eventually did take on Jack Johnson, and the Johnson-Jeffries fight took place on July 4th, 1910. This was an event that I guess was the equivalent of 10 Super Bowls.
It was. It was the most supposedly momentous sporting event in history up to that time. There were 300 and something newspaper men in the little town of Reno, Nevada to cover it. Famous people, Jack London was there, various other very famous writers.
And they all came to see the fight of the century. What happened?
Well, they came to see what had been billed as the fight of the century. What they saw was an old, tired, undertrained Jim Jeffries, totally outfought and outthought by Jack Johnson, who toyed with him, laughed at him, kidded with reporters, talked to people in Jeffries' corner, and knocked out the unknockoutable Jim Jeffries.
Now, we should say that there were people gathered in Reno, but people were also gathered around telegraph machines in halls and churches and theaters and porches and saloons all over the country.
It was the biggest news event of the time, and people were listening everywhere, both black and white. And that night, there were the most widespread, not the most serious, but the most widespread race riots in American history until the death of Dr. King, almost entirely caused by drunken whites who saw or thought they saw blacks being too happy over Johnson's victory. At least 26 people died, and there may have been more, and certainly scores more were injured. It was an awful business. In almost every city in the country, there were race riots.
For white America, he was quite a conundrum. His utter dominance in the ring was one thing, but his utter disregard for the rules of polite society at the turn of the century was something else. And one example of that was a string of very public relationships with white women.
That's right. He said several times that he felt you should act as if race didn't matter. And he fell in love with both black and white women. It's the white ones people remember and the ones that he was photographed with. And that was almost inconceivable in his time. I mean, you could be, you know, it was the era of lynching. And one of the great mysteries of Jack Johnson is how he survived. I mean, people threatened to kill him all the time, and people did try several times, but it never affected his life, the way he wanted to live his life. He said, "I am not a slave. I will choose the women I want to have with me."
Given the way that Johnson lived his life, and particularly his relationships with white women, how was he viewed in the black community?
He remained a hero to some. I think there were church-going, middle-class people who took a dim view of boxing anyway and saw him as a sport, which is the word used in those days. He was a snappy-dressing guy with lots of women and diamond stick pins and so on. And I think a lot of them disapproved of people like that anyway and also thought that he was going to reflect badly on the race. So I think that the views of him were very mixed.
Now, most of his fighting life, Johnson was at the center of a legal firestorm of one form or another. Long before he became the world heavyweight champion, he had all kinds of legal problems. He wasn't as successful in those battles as he was in the ring.
No, the federal government finally beat him. They got him on a trumped-up a morals charge. In fact, all he had done was paid for the rail tickets for a former girlfriend to go from Pittsburgh to Chicago. But the federal government was determined to get him in order to teach black Americans a lesson about miscegenation. There are memos that prove this, and they got him. He spent 7 years in exile overseas and then came back and served his time.
His final years?
His final years were like the final years of most athletes. He tried boxing again. It started too late and eventually got fat and paunchy and so on. But he never lost his panache. I don't know how else to say it. He was always beautifully dressed. He was always sharp. He always had a fine car. And he remained Jack Johnson till the day he died.
Jeffrey Ward, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Ward is the author of Unforgivable Blackness, The Rise and Fall of Jack Johnson. Johnson died in 1946 in an automobile accident after being insulted by a white restaurant owner. You can see a clip from the Ken Burns documentary at npr.org.